This is Audible.
Open House by Elizabeth Berg, read by Becky Ann Baker. Prologue. You know before you know, of course. You are bending over the dryer, pulling out the still warm sheets, and the knowledge walks up your backbone. You stare at the man you love, and you are staring at nothing. He is gone before he is gone. The last time I tried to talk to David was a couple of weeks ago. We were in the family room, David in his leather recliner, me stretched out on the sofa. Travis was asleep. He'd had his 11th birthday party that afternoon, the usual free-for-all, and had fallen into bed exhausted. The television was on, but neither of us was watching it. David was reading the newspaper, and I was rehearsing. Finally, "David," I said. He looked up. I said, "You know, you're right in saying we have some serious problems, but there are so many reasons to try to work things out." I hoped my voice was pleasant and light. I hoped my hair wasn't sticking up or that my nose didn't look too big and that I didn't look fat when I sat up a bit to adjust the pillow. "I was wondering," I said, "if you would be willing to go see someone with me, just once, a marriage counselor. I really think Samantha," he said. And I said, "Okay." He returned to the paper, and I returned to lying on the sofa, to falling down an elevator shaft. There were certain things I could not think about but kept thinking about anyway. How to tell the people I'd have to tell. How lonely the nights would be. That was a very long elevator shaft. How I believed so hard and for so long that we would be able to overcome everything, and now I would have to admit that we could not. How wrenching it is when the question you want to ask is, "Why don't you want me?" But you cannot ask it, and yet you do not ask or talk about anything else. "David," I said again, but this time he did not look up. Chapter 1. I dressed to bring in the morning paper, the new me. I once read that Martha Stewart never wears a bathrobe. Not that I like Martha Stewart. Nobody likes Martha Stewart. I don't even think Martha Stewart likes Martha Stewart, which actually makes me like her. But anyway, maybe she's on to something. You get up, you make your bed right away, you shower and dress, ready, armed, fire. I go into the kitchen to make a strong pot of coffee and to start Travis's breakfast. French toast he'll have today, made from scratch, cut diagonally, one piece lying artfully over the other, and I'll heat the syrup. Serve it in the tiny flowered pitcher I once took from a room service tray. I'll cut the butter pats into the shape of something, a whale maybe, he likes whales, or a corvette. If that doesn't work, I'll make butter curls with a potato peeler. I lay out a blue linen placemat at the head of the dining room table, smooth it with the flat of my hands, add a matching cloth napkin pulled through a wooden ring, wedding gift. I center a plate, lay out the silverware, then step back to regard my arrangement. I really think Travis will appreciate this. My head hurts, my head hurts, my head hurts, my head hurts. I stand still for a moment, which is dangerous. So I go back into the kitchen, pull a dusty wine glass wedding gift down from the high cupboard above the refrigerator, wash it, and bring it to the dining room to center directly over the knife. Then I go back in the kitchen and select 3 oranges from the fruit bowl. I will squeeze them for juice just before he takes his seat. Actually, Travis doesn't like fresh orange juice, but he's got to get used to elegance, because that's the way it's going to be from now on. Starting today. Well, starting last night, really. But Travis was asleep when the revolution started. I went to Bloomingdale's and charged a few things last night. That was the start. But when I got home, Travis had gone to bed. I stand straighter, take in a deep breath. This is the first day. Every day that comes after this will be easier. Later, when I think of Travis sleeping, the thought will not pick up my stomach in its hands and twist it. All right, butter. The whale shape does not work, nor does the corvette, but the butter curls do, more or less. I lay them carefully over ice chips in a small bowl, then bring them out to the dining room and place them to the right of his spoon. Is that where they go? There must be some incredibly expensive Martha Stewart book on table settings I can buy. Perhaps I'll hire a limo to take me to the bookstore later. I don't really feel like driving. Perhaps I will take the limo to Martha's house. I understand you're divorced, I'll say. You seem to be doing all right. Back in the kitchen, I gulp down another cup of coffee. Then I mix eggs and milk in a blue and yellow bowl, that tiny shop in Paris, our week-long vacation there. I stood at the window one morning after I'd gotten up, and he came up behind me and put his arms around my middle, his lips to the back of my neck. Add a touch of vanilla, a sprinkle of sugar. I put a frying pan on the stove, put his lips to the back of my neck, and we went back to bed. Lay out two slices of bread on the cutting board. These hands at the ends of my wrists remove the crusts. I'm not sure why. Oh, I know why. Because they're hard. I sit down at the table, stand up, sit down, concentrate on my breathing. That's supposed to help. Actually, it does not. I check my watch. Good, only 5 more minutes. I take off my apron and go upstairs to my bathroom. I brush my teeth again, put in my contacts, comb my hair, apply eyeliner, mascara, and a tasteful shade of red lipstick. I straighten the cowl neck of my new sweater. It's red, too, cashmere. I dab a little joy, also new, behind my ears and on my wrists. Then I stand still, regard myself as objectively as possible in the mirror. Well, I look just fine. Okay, circles under the eyes, big deal. The main thing is, what a wonderful change for Travis. Instead of him seeing me in my usual old bathrobe with the permanent egg stain on the left lapel, I am nicely dressed, made up, and ready to go. Everything will be different starting today. Everything will be better. I go into Travis's room. He is messily asleep. Covers wrapped around one leg, pajama top hiked high on his back, pillows at odd angles, his arm hanging over one side of the bed. "Travis," I say softly, raising his shade. "It's 7 o'clock. I sit down beside him, rub his back. "Travis?" "I'm up," he says sleepily. Then turning over quickly, eyes wide. "What stinks?" He puts his hand over his nose. I stand, step back. "Perfume, it's... Listen, get dressed and come down for breakfast, okay? I'm making French toast." No reaction. "I mean, not the frozen kind, from scratch. Please, Travis." He sits up, rubs his head. Two blonde cowlicks stick up like devil horns. He is wearing one of David's t-shirts with his own pajama bottoms. The bottoms are too short for him, I see now. Well, no problem. Today I will replace them. Maybe Ralph Lauren makes pajama bottoms for kids. Silk ones, monogrammed. Travis yawns again, hugely, scratches his stomach. I look away, despairing of this too manly movement. It seems so recent that I had to step around imaginative arrangements of Legos, jagged-backed dinosaurs, secret space stations, tools for surgery to wake him up. Now he hides a well-thumbed issue of Playboy under his bed. One day when Travis was at school, I inspected Miss August thoroughly. I felt like putting in a note for the next time he looked at her. "Dear Travis, please be advised that this is not a real woman. These are bought boobs, and pubic hair looks nothing like this in its natural state. This woman needs to find her life's work and not spend all of her time in front of a mirror. If you went out with her, you would soon be disappointed. Signed, a caring friend." "I don't want French toast," Travis says. "I want Cheerios." "You have Cheerios every day." "Right, because you see, I like them." Sarcastic, like David, but he is smiling saying this. It is David's smile born again. "Well, today is a special day," I tell him. "How come?" "We'll talk about that later." "Okay, but I don't want French toast." "Why don't you just try, please?" My God, you'd think he was begging for a stay of execution. Fine. I make my mouth smile, make myself walk slowly down the stairs, one foot, then the other. I am wearing pantyhose under my new jeans, and I feel the fabrics rubbing together as if each is questioning the other's right to be there. I go into the family room, pipe tobacco, and turn the stereo on to the classical station. Ah, Mozart. Well, maybe not Mozart, but close enough. It's one of those guys. I'll take a music appreciation class somewhere. Then, getting ready to sit down to dinner with Travis some night, I'll say, "Some Verdi, perhaps?" "That's an idea," he'll answer. "But maybe Vivaldi would be better with lamb." "You know, you're absolutely right," I'll say. I will have taught him this exquisite discrimination. As a famous man, Travis will say to the interviewer, "My mother changed wonderfully when my father left us. Our circumstances actually improved. Naturally, I owe her everything." In the dining room, I remove Travis's plate from the table, then go into the kitchen to pour Cheerios into a bowl. Too plain. I'll slice some banana on top in a most beautiful way. I pick up a knife, and some feeling comes over me that has me rush over to the kitchen table. I sit and hold the knife and try very hard to stifle a sob. Not now, later. And then something occurs to me. David may change his mind. That's why he didn't insist on telling Travis himself right away. He's not sure he even wants to do this. This is male menopause, early male menopause. It could be that. They get that just like they get their own version of PMS. They just don't admit it. He's been so moody. I haven't been good about listening to him. I haven't been willing to talk about a lot of things I do wrong. He could very well have needed to just act out this way, scare himself a little. Well, scare both of us. And now he'll come back and we'll just straighten this out. Men. I get up, Lucy Ricardo. I take a banana from the fruit bowl, slice it evenly, ignore the feeling of a finger tapping my shoulder. Sam, he's not coming back. I look at my watch, pour milk into the pitcher I was going to use for the syrup. Then I pick a pink blossom off the begonia plant on the kitchen windowsill to rest beside his plate. I carry everything out to the dining room, carefully arrange it, then lean against the door jamb. Outside, the sun shines, birds call, cars pass with the windows down, people's elbows hanging out. I am exhausted. It will be a few minutes before Travis comes down. I need to do something. I go into the basement to start a load of wash. When I begin separating, I find a pair of David's boxer shorts, the blue ones, and God help me, I bury my face in them for the smell of him. I look up and see my sewing machine. I bring his shorts over to it, then using a hidden seam, I sew the fly shut. With great care, I do this with tenderness. Then I go back to the pile of laundry and get some of his fancy socks and sew the tops of them shut. I have a lot of David's clothes to choose from. He packed last evening like he was only going on a business trip for a couple of days. And I sat on the bed watching him, thinking, why is he packing? Where is he going? Why must he do it like this? Does he think he's in a movie? What can I say to stop this? Isn't there something to say to stop this? But I couldn't say anything. I felt paralyzed. And when he finally stood at the doorway of the bedroom and said, "I'll call you," I'd waved. Waved. Then from the bedroom window, I'd watched him drive away, marveling at his cool efficiency in signaling at the corner. I could not stay in the house alone. I would not stay in the house. Travis was gone. He went to his friend Ben's house every Thursday after school to eat dinner and do homework. He liked going there because that family had three dogs and a cat, whereas, as Travis frequently liked to point out, he had nothing, not even ants. I called my mother, telling her briefly what had happened and asking her to come over and wait for Travis to get home. And then I got in the car and drove to the mall and charged and charged and charged. When I got home, my mother assured me that, as requested, she had not said anything to Travis. Amazingly, she said little to me either. "We'll talk later, honey," she said. And I answered in what I hoped was a noncommittal way. I was so grateful she had come. I wanted so much for her to go. I come up from the laundry room and find Travis seated at the dining room table, delicately picking the banana off his Cheerios. "How come I'm eating out here?" he asks. "For fun. Can I have some orange juice?" "Oh, yes, I forgot. I'll go make it right now." "You're making it?" "Yes, you're having fresh squeezed orange juice." "I don't like fresh squeezed orange juice. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know I don't like it. It's got all that stuff floating around that bumps into your teeth. Plus, I don't like bananas on my cereal either." "Travis, listen to me. You must try new things every now and then. Sometimes you have learned to like things in your sleep. Are we out of Tropicana? Yes, we are. He gets up and goes to the refrigerator, peers in, triumphantly pulls out a carton of juice. It's right here, Mom, practically full. We're not out of it, see? I take the carton from him, upend it over the sink. Now we are. We stand there. Finally. Jesus, he says, what's wrong with you? Let's see what to do. Come with me, I say. I lead him to the dining room, point to his chair. Finish your cereal, okay? It's almost time to go. I sit down with him, taking a breath. I'm sorry about the orange juice, Travis. I'm really sorry I did that. That wasn't right. I clasp my hands together, stare at him. He has a bit of sleep stuck in one corner. Wipe your left eye, I tell him. You need to wash your face a little better in the morning. And listen, I don't want you saying Jesus like that. You do, he wipes at his right eye. Other eye. Dad does. He does it all the time. I sit still. Outside, I see the wind lift up a branch, rock it, then let it go. Finally, I say, I don't care who does it, Travis. It's not okay for you to do it. Don't say it anymore. Fine. I lean back in my chair, sigh. What's wrong? He asks. There is something wrong. I said. Right. But I don't want you to worry. I'm going to talk to you about it, okay? But I think it would be best if we waited until after school. Are you going somewhere, Mom? I don't answer right away. I don't know. Am I? Worried now. How come you're all dressed already? Are you going to the doctor or something? Someone in Travis's grade had lost his mother recently. The knowledge festered among the kids, spooked them terribly despite the carefully planned programs presented by the guidance counselors. There I am, suddenly grounded. It is such sweet, wave-like relief. Oh, sweetie, no, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that. I'm sorry, I know I'm acting... I'm just tired. But we'll talk later. It'll be fine. I smile brightly. So, did you like eating breakfast this way? What way? Well, you know, out here in the dining room, fancy dishes. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it was nice. Thanks, Mom. Oh, what am I doing? Why am I making him take care of me? Travis picks up his book bag, then shifts his shoulders, seeming to adjust himself inside himself, a gesture of love. Can I kiss you goodbye, I ask? Our old joke. Every morning I ask him this, and every morning, since he turned 9 anyway, he makes a face as though I were asking him if I could spoon cold oatmeal into his ear. But now he nods yes, and my stomach does an unpleasant little somersault. I put my lips to his cheek, and he kisses me back, pecks at my cheek, and then quickly turns away. So, he knows. They are absolutely right. Kids always know. When he comes home from school today and I tell him that David has moved out, he will nod sadly and say, I thought so. And then he will start making F's. I watch him walk down the sidewalk toward school. His jacket collar is half up, half down. His jeans are slightly too long. They bunch up over the top of his sneakers. His book bag carries papers with his earnest script, his own thoughts about the material he is assigned to read. He is just beginning to become himself. He is too young to have to face what he is going to have to face. It will shape him too much, quash his tender optimism. It's unfair. It's so unfair. That's what I should have told David. Do what you have to do, but don't walk out on Travis. For God's sake, ruin my world if you have to, but don't ruin his too. Back in the kitchen, I take a sip from my coffee. It's gone cold, a ring of congealed cream visible at the outside edge. Look how fast things turn. I dump the coffee out, then throw the cup in the trash. I never want to see that cup again. David, I say very softly, like a prayer. David, I say again and lean against the wall to cry. It helps. It's so funny how it helps. Stress hormones get released when you cry. That's why it works. It's amazing how smart the body is. Though maybe we could do without loving. I think it's overrated and I think it's too hard. You should only love your children. That is necessary because otherwise you might kill them. But to love a man? It's overrated and it's too hard, and I will never, ever do it again. Well, what I will do now is make a list. There's a lot to think about, so much to do. I'll go outside. I'll sit out there where it's so much bigger, where there is no roof to fall in on your head and make you brain damaged should you survive. At 3:30, I am sitting on the sofa in the family room waiting for Travis. I've had a nap. I'm fine. Well, I've had a couple of naps. The waking up part, that's hard. Oh, yes. One thing I want to be sure of is that Travis does not blame himself in any way. I believe I should start with that. Out loud, I practice. Travis, sweetie, I need to tell you some things that will be hard for you to hear. Yes, good. But what I want you to understand and to remember the whole time I'm talking is this. All of this is about your father and me. This decision. It has nothing to do with you. You are such a good boy. Yes. No. This is starting with a negative. It will scare him. Start with something positive. Travis, as I'm sure you know, both your father and I love you very much. No, that will scare him too. Oh, what then? Guess what, Travis? Your father left us, and now we have to get a whole new life. Do you want a dog? I was never the one who objected to pets, you know. Do you want a Newfoundland? I think they weigh about 500 pounds. Do you want one of them? The door opens, and Travis comes in, sees me from the hallway. Hi, Mom. The last normal thing. Oh, hi. Hi, honey. He regards me warily. Are you... I'm fine. He nods, heads toward the kitchen. What are you doing? Getting a snack. Do you want some pretzels? No, thanks. I cross my legs, fold my hands on my lap, uncross my legs. Travis? Yeah? Why don't you put your pretzels in a bowl, okay? Silence. Travis? He comes into the room holding the bag of pretzels. What do I need a bowl for? The bag is fine. I always eat out of the bag. Well, it's inelegant is what I want to say. I would like to say that. I've always liked that word. And I have to tell him that we need to make some changes here. Things are going to change. But the bag is fine, I say, and then, could you come here, please? He walks over slowly, sits beside me, offers me the bag of pretzels. No, thanks. They're a little stale. Travis, I begin. I know, you're getting a divorce. He looks up at me, sighs. I sit back, smile. Aren't you? Well, yes, I figured. You figured? Yeah. Why? He puts his finger in his ear experimentally, it seems, twists it. Travis, huh? Why did you figure? I don't know, everybody gets divorced. Oh, no, not everyone. There are many, many happy marriages. I'm sure you'll have one. But your father and I have decided that, yes, we want a divorce, and so we're going to be living apart from one another, starting last night. Where is he? He's close by. He's at a hotel in town. He called me this afternoon. And he'll be calling you tonight, Travis. He told me to tell you he'd be calling you after dinner. And that he will be seeing you very soon. What time? Pardon? What time will he call? I don't think he said that. I think he just said after dinner. Yeah, but what does that mean? What time does that mean? Okay. I think about 7? Right around 7, all right? Why is he at a hotel? Beats me. Honey, when people decide they aren't going to be together any longer, they often need a little time apart to think about things. But you're getting divorced. Yes. So you'll be apart. Yes, but there just sometimes has to be this. Whatever, I don't care. Oh, Travis, I'm so sorry. He shrugs, inspects his thumb, the wall. It's all right. His right knee starts bouncing up and down, and I have to stop myself from stopping it. When Travis was 6, he fell off a jungle gym and hurt his arm. The X-ray technician kept telling him to hold his arm a certain way. It required a kind of twisting. Travis kept saying he couldn't do it, and the impatient tech finally went into the room with him and made his arm go the way she wanted it to. "Now keep it like that until I get the picture," I heard her say. When Travis came out of the room, he had tears in his eyes, and when he saw me, he began crying. A little later, when the x-rays were hung, the doctor saw that there was a break right where the tech had been twisting. "That must have hurt," the doctor said, "holding your arm that way." Travis nodded gravely. He wasn't crying anymore. He'd been given a lollipop and a sticker that said, "I just got an x-ray." "Travis, it's not all right. I want you to know that Dad and I both know that, and we also want you to understand that this decision had nothing to do with you. I just got taken off the hook for my parents' divorce." "I know that."
"Do you?"
"Yeah, why would it have to do with me?" "Well, that's absolutely right, Travis. We both love you very much, and we will both continue to be your parents. It's just that Dad and I can't live together anymore."
"Why?"
"Well, sometimes people, even when they really love each other, they kind of grow apart, and it becomes very hard to... Because your father is a very, very selfish person who thinks only of himself. Always has, always will. He deserted me, Travis, just like that. I had no idea he was so unhappy. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what to do. I really hate him for this. I hate him." I put my hand to my mouth, start to cry. "Oh, Travis, I'm sorry. I'm going upstairs to my room for a while."
"Wait,
Mom, please."
"Yes, all right."
A weight attaches itself to my chest, sinks in and in. Maybe it's a heart attack. I hope it is. Travis walks quickly up the stairs. I hear his door close. I hold one of my hands with the other, stare out the window. Sit there. Sit. When I see the sun beginning to go down, I head up to his bedroom, on the pretense of asking what he'd like for dinner. Tomorrow morning I will call someone for help. To think that I asked David to let me be the one to tell Travis, and to let me be alone telling him. I should have known better. I don't blame David for leaving me. I would like to leave me, too. I would like to step into the body of a woman who does not get lost going around the block, who does not smell of garlic for 3 days after she eats it, who can make conversation with David's clients at a restaurant rather than going into the ladies' room to sit in the stall and find things in her purse to play with. David has never liked my mother, who is just plain foolish, or my best friend Rita, who does not censor her thoughts enough to suit him. Gray hair is popping out all over my head. I have become intimately acquainted with cellulite, and just last week I awakened to hear myself snoring. I want to leave too, but I can't. I go upstairs and knock on Travis's door. There is a moment. Then he calls, "Come in," and I can feel the relief clear to the edges of my scalp. Chapter 2. Whenever the phone rings, I answer it as if the rescuers have appeared in a helicopter above me and are lowering the rope. "Hello," I say, meaning please. It is never the rescuers. It is a cheerful young girl wanting to know if I would like to contribute to the ballet. "Not this year," I say. It is Monica Kaplan asking if I'd like to contribute a dozen cupcakes for the bake sale coming up in October. "I'll bring a few dozen," I say. And now it is my mother. "Honey, you have got to get right back on the horse. I mean it. I don't say you're not hurting. God knows I know that. But you've got to get right out there and start dating. You're still a young woman. 42 is nothing. You're an infant." It is 12 noon. I am sitting at the kitchen table with a stack of mail order catalogs and an empty box of Godiva chocolates, which I now know are seriously overrated. Also with an empty scotch glass, but I didn't put much in there. Hardly anything. I pull the telephone away from my ear and lay it on my chest, breathe out a long sigh. I wish I hadn't told my mother so soon, but I had to. I put the phone back to my ear. "Ma, I'm not ready to date, for God's sake. I couldn't care less about that. I just want to figure out how to keep Travis safe." I look at the scotch glass, turn it upside down. "Well, he's safe, Sam. He's with his mother. Of course he's safe. And despite what you may think, children are really very, very resilient. You'd be surprised. I can tell you with all certainty that what Travis wants right now is for you to go on with your life. That's what will help him the most. He doesn't want to see you mooning around doing nothing. You haven't cried in front of him, have you? For God's sake, don't cry in front of him, whatever you do. He's taking his cues from you. If you're happy, he'll be happy. Think of it as your job to pick yourself up and get going again. Why, when your father died, I didn't waste any time. I went right out and started meeting people. Meeting men, you mean? Well, yes, of course. It's a natural thing. Woman needs man, and man needs woman. And that's all there is to it. I don't care what anybody says. For the homosexuals, of course, it's a little different, but it's still the same anyway. What? Oh, you know what I mean. The point is, if a child sees his mother dating, it lets him know that she's special. And then, of course, he feels special, too. I'm not making this up. Just think back to how you girls felt when I dated. You didn't mind at all. You liked it. I close my eyes, rub my forehead. Where to start? I remember distinctly sitting at the kitchen table eating dinner with my sister Louise a few months after our father died. We were having macaroni and cheese with hot dogs sliced into it. While we ate, our mother sat at the table with us, doing her nails. She had a date that evening, and her hair was in pin curls, covered with a bright yellow kerchief. She chewed ice cubes from a sweating aluminum tumbler while she painted each fingernail a thrilling red. She was going out to dinner, to a very nice restaurant, she said, that she'd heard all about. There was a live orchestra at that restaurant, men in tuxedos, and oh, the violins were supposed to be fantastic. There was a little lamp on the table that you turned on whenever you wanted the waiter to come. When they brought the check, they presented it along with a red rose for the lady, long-stemmed. Our mother tried to date at least 3 times a week. She marked her calendar with red X's and names, keeping a desperate tally. Tonight was Wolfgang Mueller, Wolfie, she called him, a wholesale meat man who had the unfortunate habit of spitting a bit when he talked. He was a very tall man with black eyebrows that seemed intent on escaping his face. They grew straight out a good half inch. You could land an airplane there, Louise said the first time we met him. The hot dogs we were eating were a gift from him, presented to our mother the last time they went out.
For you, my Veronica, he'd said,
bowing slightly and handing her the meat, wrapped in white butcher's paper and tied with red and white striped string.
Und here, you see, he said, pointing proudly, I have made the string so as to look like a little mouse. Here we have little ears, here is the body, and here's the tail, you see?
Oh, Wolfie, my mother had said. And then she had shown Louise and me the package, saying, Look, can you see the mouse Wolfie made for you? I stared in vain, and Louise left the room. Next he'll show up here in lederhosen, she told me later. I was 10 then, young enough to believe that hot dogs mixed with macaroni was fine dining, and to be thoroughly captivated by the idea of dating, if not by the men you had to spend time with in order to do it. As I saw it, the men were pretty much beside the point. It was the getting ready part that mattered. On the day when she had a date, my mother pored through magazines to find the style most appropriate for that evening, then washed and set her hair. About an hour before pickup time, she took a lengthy bubble bath. She emerged in a warm cloud of fragrance, then sat at her dressing table, rolled up her robe sleeves, and went to work. I would sit on her bed playing with Betsy McCall paper dolls and watching my mother style her hair in one updo or another, bobby pins clamped between her teeth. Next, she applied foundation in smooth, upward strokes to her face and neck, even to the back of her neck. She put a dot of rouge on each cheek, then rubbed it in for quick blossoming of color. That was my favorite part. She applied her mascara carefully, her mouth open, then darkened her eyebrows. Next, lipstick, laid on thickly, blotted on a tissue. She screwed on sparkly earrings, turned her head left and right. She would anoint herself with micin and then slip into a dress that came from a plastic protector. How do I look? She would always ask, turning on her tiptoes like the ballerina on my jewelry box. And I would always answer truthfully, beautiful. I was sad when she was ready to go, The delicious sounds of clicking bottles and rustling fabrics would be gone. Her rich scent would fade, and I would be left with Louise, whose idea of being a good babysitter was to let me do things for her. I did not yet agree with Louise that our mother was absolutely mortifying, at least not all of the time. I did not agree that we should run away to New Jersey to live with our father's relatives, all of whom were much more dignified than our mother. I was still tucked in at night, still wanted, at that time, to have my mother stay and stay beside me. Louise, on the other hand, was 14, newly free of needing primal comfort and therefore deeply scornful of it. She spent most of her time locked in her room. Perhaps more than anything, Louise hated our mother's going out with men she called the goons. She was so obvious about it, Louise told me. She was so eager to take up with anyone who came along. And it pained me, too. It did. Louise and I had adored our father, a good-looking and gentle man who died with open-eyed surprise from a heart attack at 41. But we said nothing to our mother. But now, finally, I do. No. In fact, we hated your dating. It didn't make us feel better at all. Of course it did, my mother says. I know the gesture that will accompany this remark. Veronica will reach up to the right side of her face and adjust a few pieces of the red hair curled there. Emphatically. I used to wonder why there weren't fingerprint-sized dents all along the side of her face. I stretched the phone cord out to dump the candy box in the trash. Listen, I appreciate your concern, I really do. But I don't want advice just yet, okay? For one thing, it's a different situation entirely. David isn't dead. My mother sniffs. As far as I'm concerned, he is. You know, Ma, I only called to see if you could stay with Travis for a while this afternoon. Maybe make him dinner if I'm not back in time. Could you do that, do you think? Of course I can. I have a pedicure at 1:30. I'll be able to get there long before he's home from school. All right. So I'll see you when I get home, sometime around, I don't know, sometime. Sam?
Yes.
Where you going, honey? You sound a little... You're not going to a therapist, are you? They're crazier than the rest of us, really, they are. I knew a woman, well, actually, you might remember her, Louise Castlebaum. Always trying to show off her legs, which, in my opinion, were not so worthy of showing off. But anyway, she went to a therapist, a full-blown psychiatrist. And, Ma, I am not going to a therapist. I'm going nuts. I'm going shopping. Well, now, that's better. That's a very good thing to do. Just forget about things, indulge yourself a little. Then her tone shifting. And what should I say if David calls? Should I say you're out with someone else? They should keep a permanent chair empty for my mother in some sixth-grade classroom. Stencil her name on it. She'd be so comfortable there. David is not going to call, I tell her. What makes you so sure? Because, if you must know, he told me very clearly that he wanted us to have a week of no communication before we talked any more, at all, about anything. He is talking to Travis, but not to me. Oh, I see. All right, Mother? All right. Sam, I really have to go. Real quick now, just listen. You're going out anyway, right? I have an extra coupon for a pedicure. You could swing by Stefano's and get one with me. Wouldn't cost you anything, not a cent. Even the tip is included. I know you think it's silly, but really, a good pedicure could do you a world of good. Change your whole outlook. When your feet feel good, you do too. This could be just the ticket.
I don't think so, but thanks. I hang up the phone, go upstairs to dress. Once, after I broke up with my high school sweetheart, my mother bought me petal pushers. She came into my bedroom where I'd been weeping, holding them up and swaying them from side to side. "Look what's back in style," she said, "with a cute little pair of sandals." When I didn't respond, she sat on the bed beside me, put her arm around me. "Well, honey, what is it? Don't you like yellow? I thought they were so cheerful, but I swear, they have every color under the sun. I can go back right now and exchange them. How about purple? Would that do it?" She squeezed me, leaned over to look into my face, wiped some tears away. "Pink?" When we were roommates in college, Rita had once asked, extremely gently, if my mother were mentally retarded. No, I said, just Southern. That was the only explanation I could come up with at the time, and I still make do with it. Chapter 3. The salesman at Tiffany's is wearing a navy blue suit, a beautiful red silk tie, and a white shirt with discreet blue stripes, also monogrammed cufflinks, gold, with a rich patina. He is half-bald, red-nosed, a drinker, I suppose, though an elegant one, who makes his martinis in a baccarat pitcher before he passes out from them every night. Perhaps I'll buy one of those pitchers, too. Thus far, I have ordered a Limoges China tea set. It is for me to use in the late afternoons. I will sit by a window that has good light and that will also very soon have French lace curtains, or Belgian, whatever's more expensive. After some deliberation, I selected the American Garden China pattern. I like the drooping petals of the scattered and varied flowers, the hopeful green curl of the leaves that surrounded them. The thin outer ring of gold, 14 carat, I asked. 23, madam, he answered. Around the edge of the plate was beautiful, next to the inner ring of a rich navy blue. I never wanted such things before, and David was indifferent. He'd had enough of it all growing up. But now I do want them. I'm not sure why. Well, yes, I do know why. I want them because they cost a fortune, and I think David should have to pay. Such a cliché. You break my heart, and I break the bank. Now I'm looking at silver. I want a teaspoon to accompany the tea set. Sugar? I will ask myself. Oh, yes, please, I will answer. The man has recommended a floral pattern for the silver, something also called American Garden, but I actually prefer Audubon, which features birds as well as flowers. Would that work? I ask the man, and he stares slightly past me as he answers, of course you could do that. Ah. On the back of my heel is a messy Band-Aid from where I cut myself shaving this morning. I feel as though that Band-Aid has migrated onto my forehead. I would like to step into the body of a woman who knows how to order silver. Also, I would like to step into the body of a woman whose insides do not feel as though they've been spending time against the fine side of a cheese grater. After an awkward moment, I say, I think I'll just go ahead with the American Garden design. Now, a teaspoon is $90, is that right? That's correct. Uh-huh, Jesus. And let me just ask you, a complete place setting of this silver would be $485 for the four pieces, plus tax, of course. Four pieces? Yes. That's the two forks, a knife, and a spoon. No dessert spoon? That would be extra. A dessert spoon would be another $125. Oh, right. And so a five-piece setting would be $610. I see. Ever so slightly, my stomach begins hurting. The man waits, standing so straight and still, I wonder for a moment if he is mechanized, a little Tiffany's trick that nearly succeeds due to the verisimilitude of the reddened nose. But no, there he is, exhaling real air. I sense an extremely polite impatience. He knows I'm a fake. He doesn't think I can afford any of this. Well, he's absolutely right. I can't. But the bill will go to David. Suppose I wanted an entire silver setting, I say, a light in the pale blue eyes. For, I feel the color rise in my face. Has he understood? Does he know what I'm doing? Do I? Well, I just like it. Oh, yes, understandably, of course. But place settings, I meant, service for, oh, yes, for six. He nods, smiles. His teeth cross endearingly in the front. I can see the tracks of his comb through his hair. I wonder if Vitalis is back in style. Should I tell Travis to start using it? Oh, too much is on me now. I'll tell you what, I say. Let's make it service for 10. There, now I feel better. Could you excuse me for just one moment, the man asks. I'll get my calculator, and I need to go in back for some more order forms. It'll be just a moment. I give a grand wave of dismissal, Queen Elizabeth, Elizabeth Taylor. Take your time, I tell him. I'll just look around. I put the sample teacup back carefully on the lighted display shelf, then move over to the jewelry. I walk past emerald rings, ruby rings, diamond necklaces, gold watches. Past whimsical pins, bejeweled seahorses and dragonflies, bees and frogs. I stop to admire long strands of lambent pearls draped over black velvet. Uniformed guards watch me from the corners of their eyes, their arms loosely crossed. I try on a channel-set sapphire and diamond necklace. Then I try on a bracelet, an etoile twist, 18-karat gold, studded with diamonds set in platinum. I turn my wrist this way and that, watching the light bounce off the stones. Very nice. And this is how much? I ask the young woman helping me. $3,500. She's wearing a gray suit with matching heels, pearl studs, and a ring with an acorn-sized diamond. It must be borrowed from the store. Her hairdo, a tightly wound twist, is much too severe. To say nothing of her demeanor, this woman needs to get out and play more. Although maybe she does play. Maybe this job, in fact, is playing. Maybe she lives in a dump with three wild roommates and tells them stories about the dipshits who shop at Tiffany. I hope so. That bracelet looks wonderful on you, the woman says. It suits you. The standard line. But it does, doesn't it? I say. I'll take it. I'll wear it out. We'll just add it to the other purchases. Certainly, the woman says, and nods to the man across the aisle in China who has resumed his post. He stands politely waiting. When I go back over to him, he looks at the bracelet. Lovely selection, very elegant. Thank you, I say. There's no reason in the world for me not to wear things like this. I have always liked the look of blue jeans and diamonds. I, too, can wear them. This will be my everyday bracelet, my signature piece. Here's how it all breaks down. The man shows me the figures for the cost of the silver and china. With the cost of the bracelet, my total will be over $12,000. $12,000. The number zips a finger up my spine, thrills me deeply in a way that reminds me of sex, from what I can recall. Well, my goodness, I say, and start laughing, and then stop. My fingers wander to the area behind my ear, an old nervous habit, the body seeking a consultation with the body. Phew! Silence from the man. From the whole store, it seems. Finally, Oh, God, I'm sorry, I say. I take the bracelet off, lay it on the counter. I think maybe I should just go with the tea set, okay? And the one teaspoon, as I had originally planned. Would that be all right? Of course. I don't know how people fall out of love, Sam. It's an old story, isn't it? The fact is, I can't endure any of this any longer. Endure. He actually said that. Or, you know what? I tell the man, let me have it all. I put the bracelet back on, leaning closer to him. Thought you'd lost me there, huh? Oh, no, not at all. It's a big decision. What's your name? My name. Three long fingers to his breastbone, shyly. Oh, he's sweet. Why didn't I marry someone like him? It's James. I'm Samantha, Sam. I'm glad to meet you. I'll bet you are. He looks up. No, I mean, apart from that. Well, thank you. I swallow away a sudden tightening in my throat, pull out my checkbook. I need new checks. I need. Driving home, I pass a young black woman standing at the side of the road with a little girl, perhaps 4 years old. The woman is holding up a sign that says, "We'll work for food." I pull over to the curb, lower the window. The woman approaches me hesitantly. "Here," I say, holding the bracelet out to her. "Don't get ripped off selling it. It's real. It's worth $3,500. The woman looks at the bracelet, then at me. "Take it," I say. She shakes her head, mutters something, walks away. "Hey," I call after her. She keeps walking. I cut the engine, get out of the car, and run after her. "Wait, I want to give you this. It's real. I'm not kidding." The woman turns slowly. "You a cop or something?" "No, I am not." My breathing is ragged. How did I get so out of shape? "You crazy then?" "Mommy," the child says softly. "Just a minute, baby, hold on." Then to me, "What's your deal anyway? I take the bracelet, you shoot me in the back, is that it?"
"Mommy, I have to pee," the little girl says.
"I know, I'm gonna take you. We're going home in just a minute." The woman stares at me through narrowed eyes, considering. She has a lovely face, a missing tooth near the front of her mouth. She is wearing a burgundy sweatshirt, yellow corduroy pants, a dirty jean jacket with half its buttons missing. The little girl wears newer sneakers and blue jeans, a down jacket zipped to her chin, though the October evening is mild. "I just bought this," I say, "but I don't want it. I want to give it to you."
"Shit. For real?"
"Yes." The woman shrugs, takes the bracelet, and quickly shoves it into her pocket. The little girl, who had been hiding behind her mother's leg, peeks out.
"My name is Tiffany."
"Is that right? There you are. This was meant to be." The woman reaches out to touch my arm.
"God bless you," she says, her eyes full of tears.
I can think of nothing to say. I watch the woman and her daughter walk away, then call out, "Did you need a ride?" The woman turns around, keeps walking backward.
"No, ma'am. We almost there, but thank you. God bless you now."
I get back into my car, pull out into the traffic. I don't know. I feel good. I don't know why I bought that bracelet. In my jewelry box are a fair number of velvet cases holding necklaces and bracelets that David gave me for my birthday, for Christmas. But I don't like fancy jewelry. I never have. The fancy things I like are sheets, pots and pans. And the things I really like aren't fancy at all. Old aprons and hankies. Butter wrappers from the 1-pound blocks. Peony bushes, hardback books of poetry. And I like things less than that, the sticky remains at the bottom of the apple crisp dish, the way cats sometimes run sideways, the presence of rainbows in a puddle of oil, mayonnaise jars, pussy willows, wash on a line, the tick-tock of clocks, the blue of the neon sign at the local movie house, the fact that there is a local movie house. I turn off the radio, listen to the quiet, which has its own rich sound, which I knew but had forgotten. And it is good to remember. Chapter 4. I am sitting in the family room in David's recliner looking at the Martha by Mail catalog and remembering a time when I had a long-lasting flu and David came home with a handmade quilt that he had bought for me. He covered me with it, then lay down beside me and read me a story from a collection I just bought. And then he made spaghetti for him and Travis, and soup for me. That was before. When did after start? I don't remember it starting. I only remember it having arrived. Things were bad for such a long time before he left. But I miss him. I can feel loneliness in me like circulation, as constant and as irrefutable. I see that Martha has some very lovely hors d'oeuvre accessories, paper leaves on which to serve cunning canapés that take about a month to make. I don't really believe that Martha herself does any of this. People say she does, but I just don't think it's true. I'll bet she lies in the bathtub and weeps and her staff does everything. I flip through pages of Matelassé bedding, egg-shaped soaps, ribbon mirrors. I'll bet she's lonely as hell and no one knows. They think she's rich and happy, and they don't understand how blank her slate is. I'll bet no one even calls her, except for business. I heard she lives in Connecticut. Was it Fairfield? I pick up the phone, call information, hear the automated voice ask, "What city?" "Fairfield, Connecticut," I say. "What listing?" the voice asks. And I say, "Martha Stewart." "Please hold," a real voice says, and I hang up. The phone rings immediately, and I let the machine get it, then hear Rita say, "Are you there? It's me." I pick up the phone. "Oh, God, Rita, I thought you were Martha Stewart." "What?" "Never mind. How are you? You got my letter?" "Yes, I got your letter. Why didn't you call me?" "I don't know. I didn't feel like talking about it." "Do you now?" I say nothing. "Well, I never liked him. You know that. And I'm not just saying that to make you feel better." "Oh, don't worry. No chance of that. I mean, remember when you got engaged and you showed me the ring? I thought you were crazy. I didn't like that ring. It was tasteless. Almost 2 carats when we were eating dinner from cans." "True. We did eat dinner from cans, Rita and I. We were in our first apartment, still students. We ate Hormel chili, Franco-American spaghetti, Dinty Moore stew, usually unheated. If we were stoned, we made do with chocolate chips." Then one evening when I was riding the bus home from class, I met David. He asked me for a drink, told me in the smoky bar that his car was in the shop. That's why he was on the bus. Normally he never rode the bus. He looked exactly like Paul Newman with brown eyes. That's what I told everyone. And everyone who met him agreed, with a kind of reluctant awe. After all, what was Newman without his eyes? David came from a family of extraordinary wealth, but he claimed not to be affected by it, said he preferred actually living well below his means, with certain exceptions. His car, for instance, an antique Morgan that he loved so much for its voluptuous lines he forgave it every inconvenience. His clothes, too, that David said were no big deal, but whose labels and fabrics suggested otherwise. After making love with him the first time, I walked around the apartment for the rest of the night wearing only his pale yellow V-neck, so as to fully appreciate the feel of fine cashmere. "Keep it," he said, yawning when he left that night, and went home wearing a jacket over his T-shirt. Later, Rita had borrowed the sweater and spilled red wine on it, which only prompted David to buy two more, one for each of us. "You were jealous," I tell Rita.
"I was not. I felt sorry for you, that you, I don't know, you stopped having fun. You started being serious all the time, trying really hard to be whatever he wanted you to be, whatever the hell that was. I honestly felt sorry for you. Everybody did. You just lost yourself."
I am too busy to respond to such an accusation. I am concentrating on drawing a square on my knee with my finger. The sides are not coming out even, I can tell. Even though the square is invisible, I can't draw either.
"You don't believe me?"
"Oh, God, Rita, I don't know. I don't remember." I do remember, though. I felt, marrying David, like a child handed a gift that was too big. I was convinced that I loved him, but it was a nervous love, even at the start, and there was a certain holding back on his part that seemed mean-spirited. But I was sure I could change that. His family was cold. It wasn't his fault. What he wanted more than anything was to open himself up. I would be his wife and help him. Over the years, I looked for ways into him, for an essential kind of access, and I failed at finding it again and again.
"So what are your plans?" Rita asks.
I look out the kitchen window, puffy clouds like the kind Travis used to draw, a deep blue sky. It's beautiful outside. The earth turns. Yesterday, I made a list that said, clear yard of debris, get gas, return calls. I might as well have added, eat, breathe. "I don't really have any plans," I say. "Plans are too hard. All I've done so far is to spend a whole bunch of money."
"Well, good. That's a start. What'd you buy, underwear? That's what my friend Eileen did. The day her husband left for a fucking dental hygienist who'd given both of them these weird gum massages, she went to Victoria's Secret and spent $500 in about 15 minutes. She got matching everything, and a whole bunch of dirty stuff, Lewinsky thongs, garter belts. I went to Tiffany's. I got china and silver. I won't mention the bracelet, no need to get into that."
"You're kidding."
"No,
you don't like that stuff."
"Well, I never did before, but now I do. I just want something different. I'm going to live another way. I have to live another way. I mean, even things like learning not to be afraid of the dark. Did you know I'm afraid of the dark? I lie awake at night now, wondering who's in the basement getting ready to come upstairs and murder me and Travis. I keep a fish knife under my bed."
"A fish knife?"
"Well, I'd never used it. I figured I might as well use it. It's very nice, pearl-handled."
"I'm sure the killer will appreciate that."
"That would be a pretty nice change, being appreciated." All the things I really want to tell Rita are stuck in my throat. I cannot say them. It's too embarrassing. I sat in the middle of the living room floor and howled like a dog, Rita. I've been contemplating accidental death. I bought a book on self-esteem, and when the author said to make a list of what I liked about myself, I couldn't do it. I could not write down one thing. After 2 days, I made one that kind of copied the suggested list, then hid it in my underwear drawer, then burned it. I can't think straight. My head is full of cobwebs. I have to concentrate really hard to open a can of soup. Gently, Rita says, "Sam, why don't you get away for a while? Come out here. I'll take time off from work. I'll take care of you." Why don't I visit Rita? She lives in a beautiful house in Mill Valley in Marin County. I could fly out to San Francisco tonight, lie around in the hammock in Rita's beautiful backyard tomorrow, staring at the gently rounded hills, at the ocean glittering in the distance. We could eat avocado and tomato and sprout sandwiches, take long walks, make bouquets of the extraordinary wildflowers that grow everywhere. Rita's husband, Lawrence, is a humanities professor, gray-eyed and bearded and calm. He casts coins for the I Ching. He is an inventive chef, and he cooks at least twice a week. He would leave us alone when we needed to be left alone, join us when we wanted him to. Rita always puts fresh flowers in my room, as well as a huge box of chocolates and a National Enquirer. She plays the music she and I used to listen to when we were roommates, The Temptations, Janis, Odetta. We talk for hours, laugh until we cry. Finally, though, I say, I can't come out there. Travis is in school. I can't just pull him out, and I don't want to leave him with David. Leave him with your mother, then. She loves to try to wreck him. I think I need to hang around. I mean, this is hard for him, too. Oh, I know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to underestimate any of this. I really don't. How is Travis, anyway? Mostly not talking. I think he thinks it's just a big fight. Is it? No. It's been coming for a long time. I don't think he ever loved me. It's sort of astonishing, isn't it? I start to cry again. Oh, honey, Rita says, I know how this hurts. I'm so sorry. I wish I could be there now. I'd do something. I know you would. It would be something wonderful, too. What would it be? Well, I have no idea, actually. I laugh, blow my nose. So, you always thought he was a jerk, huh? I really did. Did you talk behind his back? Constantly. I hope you mentioned what a terrible dancer he was. Absolutely no sense of rhythm. Not that he knew that. We covered that, I'm sure, as well as that reptilian gesture he made whenever he cleared his throat, sticking his chin out that way. And Sam, I know you feel awful now, but I think in the end, you'll be so much better off without him. You used to wear mascara to bed. Well, and when you had Travis, you were embarrassed that David saw the umbilical cord. Oh, God, I'd forgotten that, but it's true. I'd felt bad about how ugly it was. I hear the clock chime 3. I've got to go, Rita. Travis will be home soon. Call me tonight. What for? I need support, okay? Upstairs, I wash my face, reapply some eyeliner, then I take off all my clothes and stare at my naked self in the bathroom mirror. I turn to the side. Good breasts, but the beginning of dimpling at the tops of my thighs. And there is my stupid, flabby stomach. I wonder at what age pubic hair turns gray. I don't see how people who were married for a long time can ever take their clothes off in front of another person, another lover. How can there ever be another lover? The hands would be wrong. The face, the smell. You'd open your eyes from a kiss and what? No map. I put my clothes back on, then I head down.